Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Magnets, Crystals, and Pyramids. The song that you just heard is called Prayer, Sunrise Prayer. It's from the album by Douglas Spotted Eagle. And I dedicate that song to the sacred toad found in Arizona that is now on the verge of extinction due to the black market of poaching and selling on the internet, selling the toad on eBay to individuals that have no idea what it's like to be in a cage for the purpose of extracting low quality 5-MeO DMT from the glands of an imprisoned toad. An ancient legacy unknown to the majority of the population, of an entheogen that is at present considered the most powerful psychedelic in the world today, known as 5-MeO-DMT, Judgment Day, the God molecule. You perhaps may have heard of ayahuasca. You may perhaps have heard of psychedelic shrooms or psilocybin, cubensis, ibogaine, Hawaiian baby wood rose. These are just some of many sacred plants in the kingdom for humanity to remember. We are spirit beings having a human experience. These sacred herbs are to assist us in remembering and coming back to our authentic self instead of being our fake ego, mini mind, functioning in a desert jungle of self-imposed delusion. So before we begin further, I'd like to call on my I Am to be the only radiance on this show, only presence hosting this show. And I want to acknowledge and thank you, the listening audience. I am within each of us, each of you, because without you, there can be no me. Me, we, in the spirit of Ubuntu, we have to collectively awaken, each one teach one, each one elevate one. What have you done today to make the world a better place? Who have you assisted in a manner that was well received, heart, mind, body, or soul? So we're going to have a guest tonight, a published author, lecturer, world traveler. And I am within all the listening audience now and even in the recorded archives in months and years to come. I ask the presence of the Ascended Masters, Sheikh Amadou Bamba, call and ask to be a part of this show, Enoch, Elijah, Yahshua, Black Madonna, Mother Mary, Saint Germain, Nikolai Tesla, Wilhelm Reich, the recent inventor of Oregon. I'd like to thank the Ascended Master Ayahuasca to be on this show, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, John Brown, and all the shaman warriors of antiquity, Imhotep, Ptahotep, Akhenaten, Nefertiti, Cleopatra. I'd like to thank and invite my ancestors, your ancestors, to be a part of this show this evening, so you and I can have a correct perspective on the forgotten tool in entheogens that will not only awaken your God DNA or assist you in your God DNA, but accelerate and catapult you back on course with your life purpose. What you was born to do, as it has been said, the most important dates. First is your birthday, and second, what you were born to do, and I add to that how to go about doing it. So we're going to have Master Kalindi on. We're going to have Dr. Jerry. I should say his pronounced correct title, Dr. Gerardo R. Sandoval Isaac, medical doctor, OBGYN, is going to be featured on the show tonight. He wrote the book. I've been through this book a couple of times, reading back and forth. It's called The Bufo Alvarius Medicine Codex. This is a must read for anyone who is considering, pondering upon experiencing the Bufo, toad medicine, or the pipe ceremony. It behooves, not in haste, but in patience and thorough study, for all my fellow psychonauts, Jedi spirit walkers, to hold fast, study to show thyself approved, embracing the entheogens. I had a good brother friend call me and was asking about purchasing certain entheogens online. And I was like, hold up, brother. Right now we are in autumn. This is the time you don't buy entheogens from South America. This is a time for you to study and buy it in the spring, because that's when you have the fresh harvest of entheogens. That's when you get them fresh. And I got word, another brother who I'm sure his intentions are pure, went out at first entheogenic experience of Bufo and purchased from the poaching sales or the black market two sacred toads for his own personal use. And it made my heart heavy, because not only in this book, but also in Dr. Octavio Butler's book, Toad of Dawn, it speaks clearly to not violate crate, the extinction of the Bufo alvarius toad that is unique to Arizona and Mexico. At this time, the Bufo alvarius toad is becoming rapidly extinct. It's supposed to be underground 9 months out of the year and comes to the surface only for reproduction. That means if you try to have a home environment for the Bufo toad, the medicine is going to be impotent, because this 5-MeO DMT is generated in absolute darkness. It is not in the sunlight. It's generated in the darkness. So please, I say, as we proceed into this show, be mindful, be aware, and be good keepers of the earth. Without further ado, I'd like to bring on Master Kalindi Ayi. Master Kalindi, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show again. It's definitely one of my favorite places to be as far as blog talk and cyber world. Always get a chance to be able to share, and always get a chance to be able to learn many different things from being on the program. So I'm glad to be back on the program.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, brother. Yeah, I'm reading, Master Kalindi, they're fast becoming unavailable in the state of Arizona because of the poaching of the,
well,
the toad.
Anytime something hits the public domain, you get a flash of people wanting to do it, and now because it's becoming more accepted, entheogens in general, and told specifically, as things become, you know, more popular, people who, you know, are basically at the point to where they should be doing study and learning and trying to help preserve things that, you know, are very, very special, they become abusive. You know, it's the same thing with ayahuasca tourism. It's the same thing with ibogaine or iboga in Gabon. You know, you have people who think of it in terms only of making money with these type of things by selling it to people, selling tours, selling ceremonies to people, and it's becoming the same thing, you know, as the ayahuasca and the, you know, dealing with the iboga or ibogaine. You know, when you go to a person in a rural area and they may make, you know, $7 a week, you know, $200 a year, and you say, you know, if you just pull up some leaves and roots and things in your backyard, I'll give you, you know, $3,000, which is more than you can make in 5 years. You know, folks start to pulling up the leaves and roots and things in their backyard, and they're not really concerned about, you know, what it does to the environment of these very, very special plants and things like this. They just look at the money. And people who, you know, go after the tolls, it's the same thing. So we're in a very precarious spot here to where we want these things to be preserved so that we can continue to use them. But, you know, we have folks who are going to be abusive regardless because it's basically all about money rather than learning and experiencing these things for what they are.
You know, I'm starting to even think that for all the psychonauts, all those who embrace the sacred herbs of antiquity, and I got to say this, in our community, the so-called conscious community, religious community, they are essentially sleeping on their own legacy. I'm speaking of not only on the drum majors, the major vocalists in the community, young and old, the scholars. None of them have spoken of the entheogenic legacy, the rich heritage of our ancestral science of the plant kingdom. Why do you think folks are hesitant to invite you to the forum, Baba Kalindi? None of our folks, for the most part, even know about Toad. And those who dabble lightly into psychedelics of ayahuasca or shrooms do so with such fearful, with such trepidation. What are they so afraid of? As Harriet Tubman said, I freed 1,000 slaves. I would have freed 1,000 more had they known they were slaves. Why, Master Kalindi, are our folks so slow in this mass movement that's gone global?
Well, many of them have made investments in theoretical positions inside of what spirituality is, be it yoga, be it dealing with Kemet or the other areas of spirituality, dealing with Africa and places like this, being Yoruba, the Akan, you know, some of them don't know, but some of them know, and they aren't ready to be able to get in at the bottom of it, you know. Some now are trying to chime out with very little experience and trying to act like they are really up on the information and really have a vast knowledge in these things, and when they really don't, you know. But is basically fear. It's basically that they made investments in everyone seeing them as the be-all and know-all of the spiritual information, and, you know, to come in and say, well, I have to learn, or I have to sit and start from the beginning. You know, it's very, very difficult to be able to do that. But, you know, none of us know everything. You know, you get in where you fit in. You get in and learn and take the time to do the study. You know, these folks are researchers. They research everything, you know. And I'm, you know, not mentioning their names, but people for decades I've told about these things. And all you have to do is do the research. You Google and Wikipedia and scientific paper, everything on the net. But when you say, you know, well, research the toad, just research it, or research DMT, or just, you know, look into ayahuasca, or, you know, just Google even the safety profile of mushrooms. Mushrooms are the safest hallucinogen that they have. You know, you don't hear people dying from these things. You know, you could be irresponsible and put yourself in an unsafe environment, you know, but, you know, these things are very, very safe. You know, they're definitely safer than the pharmaceuticals. They're definitely safer than much of what we deal with, you know, just daily, you know, caffeine and nicotine and these types of things, which are much more invasive on the body and dealing with the nervous system than the hallucinogens. This is, you know, DMT, which is, you know, it's a special codex with the toad. Like Dr. Jerry's book is written about the UFO codex. There's a code for these different things, but they're all based upon DMT. And DMT is dimethyltryptamine. Dimethyltryptamine is part of natural metabolism. In other words, it's part of your body. It's two steps away from melanin. The only difference between melanin and DMT is some CO2, you know. A carbon molecule and two oxygen molecules make melanin into DMT, which is the most powerful psychedelic that we have on Earth. It's part of our natural environment. It's part of our body. It's in plants. It's in animals. It's in all mammals. It's in, you know, the plant kingdom, and it's in the reptilian kingdom with the frogs. It's all over the place. So it's natural to the human experience. It's natural to the earth. And, you know, people think that because you're taking this, you're making a shortcut, or it's unnatural, and that's just not the case. You don't tell a bodybuilder that they don't have to, if they're trying to be a world-class bodybuilder, that they don't have to deal with their diet. You don't tell people, oh, well, you know, if you're really spiritual, you don't have to eat. I know, you know, we talk about people 200 years ago that were vegetarians, or they lived on sunlight and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've run anybody that does that as of yet. And even the guy who was supposed to be the vegetarian, you know, he had a big following until they caught him at McDonald's with a, you know, with a mac cheese and fries and a strawberry shake. And then his popularity just kind of went, you know, left field. So these are things that are natural. They were paired with all of the spiritual systems, all of those practices, qigong, yoga, tai chi, whatever you're doing, it was always paired with the entheogen, because the entheogen is where they downloaded the information from the hyperdimensional realms and inculcated it into the cultures in which we live, you know. And I really want to, you know, emphasize this and, you know, hear what Dr. Jerry has to say. Has he chimed in as yet?
Not yet. I'm looking for the number that you shared with me. And I don't see it. I just tried calling, and it went right to voicemail. So if he is listening in, I hope to get a text, or you get a text, because I'm looking for him in the queue, and I don't see him.
Okay. Well, we can go on until he comes up, you know, and get a chance to hear some of the things he wants to say. But, you know,
I remember talking with when I was learning about and experiencing ayahuasca in the beginning. It's going back about 15, maybe 20 years ago. That it is becoming difficult for the local natives in Peru, in Ecuador, to even find the plant, the vine, in their local areas of Peru and Ecuador, because the global demand, I mean, it seems there's a mega trend of humanity striving for greater awareness through the plant kingdom, and perhaps one day in the near future it'll cascade down into our community. But how does the question I have for you, Master Kalindi, how does mushrooms differ as far as availability, and does it take long to cultivate?
Well, that's one thing about mushrooms, is that mushrooms are fungi, and not plants. They're not hooked to any particular animal. And with each spore plant, you have literally millions and millions and millions of spores that you can propagate mushrooms from. And see, mushrooms, we don't have to worry about them being overpicked or anything like that, because you know you have the ability to be able to cultivate them in the, you know, in your own home, in your closet or your cupboard or under your bed, and they're also part of the land. As man goes through his gyrations as far as change of the land, the debris fields, the wood chips that they use at the police station or along roads. Cow paths also are a host for mushrooms of the psilocybin and hallucinogenic varieties. So you don't have to worry about mushrooms being, you know, being over-harvested or anything like that. You can grow them yourself. One spore print will give you enough mushrooms to last the rest of your life. You can actually pass that same the same genetics from that one spore print down to your grandchildren and great-grandchildren into the future. So mushrooms are in a different state. The toad is to the Bufo various toad, and if those of all those toads are, you know, some way an extinction event which man can precipitate with these toads, then there won't be any more of that. Now they have synthetic 5-MeO, and at this particular time, I haven't had any of the synthetic 5-MeO, but I know that there's always cofactors and other areas of information inside of these compounds, these chemicals, that make a difference in the long run. I know the materialist view of entheogens is that, oh, there's no difference between the synthetic and the organic varieties, but I don't think that's so. I think isolation from the other cofactors of the toad's genetics, the toad, where it came from, and all those different types of things are all part of the makeup of dealing with that experience. So there's no difference with psilocybin. You know, they're producing synthetic psilocybin at this particular time now. And, you know, it doesn't have the Belsestine and the other constituents inside of the mushroom that are, again, cofactors, and the places cultivated and the energy of dealing with the cows and all those different types of things are all part and parcel of the deep and heavy experiences that come from utilizing the organics. Now, you know, this, you know, people will argue over and over, but that's the materialistic view of not just dealing with the psychedelics, but of reality itself, is that, you know, these things are just, you know, they're just reflections of your mind, your unconscious self, you know, experiences that you may not remember and all those type of things. And I don't believe that for a second, because I've went in deep and had very, very novel experiences. And there are things that are inside of these constructed codexes that are not part of the human experience, not part of my mind, not part of my unconscious, not part of what I think about, the things that are actually otherworldly, other-dimensionally. And until we understand this, and until we start to realize this, we're going to still be looking at the same old paradigms of materialism, that, oh, this isn't anything special. It's just opening up your conscious and unconscious thoughts and feelings and things like that, when in reality they are actually separate realities from, you know, our everyday five sense realities that we exist in.
You know, it just, in the short series of UFO ceremonies I've been to, I've been making breakthroughs in products, health products, magnet concepts, magnetic jewelry, orgone upgrades, things that I hadn't even thought of until after I had the Bufo pipe ceremony. It seemed as if I had access to greater insights that perhaps may have taken, you know, many more years of solitude and meditation. I noticed just in this year, in the time that my ego was body slammed, dissolved, washed out, the reflection was the magnetic and the orgone devices, the potency, just went through the roof. How do you think that ties into, and I see one of our sisters is a Tantra master we have on the line. I'm thinking, why do you think Silicon Valley embraces entheogens and the microdose? What possibly could they be benefiting from? Who comes to mind is Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and these are people who dabbles with psychedelics. What's the edge that you receive, Baba Kalindi, from doing such entheogens?
Well, it gives you a novel state of consciousness that will problem solve. In other words, if you're looking for something and you have, you know, you've looked at the problem, all the different vantage points that your regular consciousness can see it from, by tweaking your consciousness into a different reality, into a separate reality on a low level, it can give you novel ideas on how to address these particular problems. You know, we have, you know, even in the you know, in the Marvel or the comic book community and things like that, the things that they're coming out with now are part and parcel of entheogenic thought. The next Marvel Infinity Wars 4 coming out with Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel will then start dealing with the other worldly technologies, where the actual technologies are on her skin, reflecting inside of the body. They're going to deal more with the nanotech, even though Tony Stark in the Iron Man suit went from an actual metal suit to nanotechnology that actually is part of his physical makeup. And these type of things are all generated from being able to see what the next level is, what the next way of being is. And that's what I try to tell folks. You know, if you're doing Tai Chi, or you're doing meditation, or you're doing yoga, all these things are augmented and, you know, take it to another level when you pair it with what it originally was paired with, and that was dealing with the entheogenic portion of whatever you're doing. You know, and it's the same thing with people in technology and being able to realize what is, you know, what is the next step, the next phase. Even, you know, even dealing with Tantric Master's own entheogenic sex is true henosis. Henosis is the becoming one flesh. In other words, you're doing what you're doing, you become one being. And traveling through the multiverse into exotic worlds and planets and things like that, traveling as one being, thinking and the consciousness being merged together, so that you're not talking, but you're actually experiencing the other person's thoughts and things like that. So, I mean, all these things were hooked to the entheogens. So, with them dealing with microdosing in Silicon Valley and things like that, many of them are doing the microdosing because, you know, you can't have a and some of them are doing microdosing, but you know, in your company or corporation, everybody is getting the chance to do a full-blown psychedelic excursion at the job. You know, they're talking about Elon Musk now. He was on Joe Rogan. And, you know, he was smoking a joint and a little disheveled because he's saying now what I've been saying, you know, for several years now, that, you know, it's already too late to, and that's really what has him disgruntled and all out of whack. He finally has realized, as I said, what I've been saying for several years is too late to catch the AI, because in the initial algorithms, you have all the prejudices and all of the you know, it goes through the different areas and looks at who are the greatest criminals and, you know, what is going on with the earth and prejudice, why this person hates this person, why there are wars and all these type of things. The AI is already out of control of human beings. And it has all the information and prejudices that human beings have, and it's trying to work its way through what it's going to do with all this information. But the reason why Elon Musk is so disheveled and disgruntled, you know, as far as looking at this, he said, he's saying, I tried to tell him, you know, go slow and be more thoughtful and try to put this thing together. He said, but nobody's listening to me. And now it's actually too late. And I totally agree, because I've been saying this for, like I said, several years. You know, when I was talking about the organic singularity and technology, the AI being out of control and things like that, you know, he's Elon Musk. They're not listening to him. They're not listening, and they're definitely not listening to me. But already it's too late. And people, they're not thinking exponentially. They're thinking linearly. You know, they're saying, oh, well, maybe that'll happen in 100 years, or maybe AI will get to a point to where in 100 years you may be thinking about those things and stuff like that. No. If you think in a linear fashion, yes. But if you think in exponentially, you know, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, so on and so forth, you know, by the time these doublings start happening in the large numbers, you know, it only takes a few doublings when it gets big to fill up the whole universe. And this thing, people don't understand that, you know, within 90 seconds of this thing going online, it's going to go off the charts. It may, the whole universe may just dissolve into nothing and become part of the AI, and the AI moves off, and none of the conscious beings or unconscious beings that are in existence now will be part of that. But the one thing that we have, the thing that we have that can keep up with the AI, if we get enough people in doing the doses that are necessary And dealing with the exploration is dealing with the DMT containing tryptamine hallucinogens, of which we have access to, of which we brought and sent into this universe prior to the organization of this universe by the artificial intelligence, of which is recreating itself inside of the universe that it built. And it built this universe.
That's deep, because AI is coming up faster than we're going to see it in our lifetime. And it means nothing but trouble for the immature carbon-based life known as humanity. With their pure, cold, calculated logic, they will see that humanity as a whole are a viral species, and they're going to turn. It's been found throughout different places in the galaxies. Whenever you have artificial intelligence, it wants to remove the organic intelligence. So what you're speaking on falls right into movies like Terminator, and there was one that was just recently out called Upgrade. How has mushrooms enhanced some of your students' intuition, creativity, or even invention? And I'm saying this while we're waiting for audience, please be patient. We're waiting for Dr. Jerry to come in on the show. So I thank you again for Baba Kalindi, for you sharing these insights. We're having the time to speak on these. So please continue.
Well, I mean, as I said, if you deal with the exponential, it'll definitely be it'll be within the next 4 to 5 years. We don't have to worry about it in our lifetime. If you're around the next 4 or 5 years, it will be done and up and running. You know, we move to the 5G network, the Internet of Things, next year. They're talking about the phone system flipping over to 5G. I know they just had the talk yesterday about Apple with the, you know, iPhone XX, or the big iPhone, and, you know, people were talking about did it have a 5G modem in it. This rendition doesn't have the 5G modem because the phones will have the modems in it, and the 5G modems will hook into the 5G network, the fifth generation internet network, and be hooked and connected to everything. You know, I put up a Facebook post about a bird that they made at the science fair. It's a electronic bird. It got through it. It flaps its wings and it flies just like a bird. Things like that. And they're talking about, they're putting up this is a new device to track people. It's going to be the new drone and things like that. And I'm like, no, it's just they have the science fair and they bred a bird and they just want to show how they could, you know, make a bird that flies like a regular bird. That's all it was. They don't need those things for surveillance and all that kind of stuff. The surveillance is going to be your refrigerator. The surveillance is going to be the bed that you sleep on. The surveillance is your plant waterer, you know, and your stove and those types of things. The couch that you sit on, your TV set, and especially your phone, which is an extension of the brain of human beings. It is the external cyborg of which we are part of. And they're going to start Elon Musk is talking about the neural net, you know, connecting through a net that's injected into the brain, unfolds like an actual piece of netting, and connects to the brain and jacks you into the internet. Now, you know, I don't know who will be the first to try it, you know, but I know that these things are coming, and they're coming very fast and very soon. So the artificial intelligence will be inculcated into everything, you know. So it ain't no getting away. They don't need no surveillance, because they know where you at every minute of the day, every second of the day, when you're going in the house, when you're going to the store, when you went to the conference, what you bought, what you threw away on the street, all that kind of stuff will be part of the mega databases that the artificial intelligence holds on to. All pieces of information will be recorded. You won't be able to get away from it, you know. And they say, oh, well, you're just gloom and doom. No, I understand the technology that's going on because I've seen it under the journey with the mushroom. I've seen these artificial intelligences that are so far off the chart that you can't even imagine what it is, the magnificence of this technology. And when people talk about God builders, these things are actually artificial intelligent gods, you know. They're so far removed from the human experience and what you would think that you couldn't call them anything less. The things that we talk about as gods, or have talked about for thousands of years of gods, are pale in comparison to these artificially constructs that are in the multiverse, existing as organic technologies that are artificial. We say artificial, they're actually not artificial, but, you know, for lack of a better word, we call them artificial intelligences.
Wow. That's kind of scary. Getting back to people who are interested in cultivating mushrooms, which way would you direct them? People who are interested in, say, growing their own batch and have no clue, how would you direct them?
Well, I direct them to start. You can start with YouTube, just doing research, and also articles. Earwad, which is a clearinghouse for psychedelics, you can go to. You can go to the shroomery.org and pick up tips and ways to get your equipment and things like that. So for, you know, less than a couple of $100, you can get all the equipment. You know, if you want to go from bargain basement and keep it thin, you can go less than $100 and get all the things you need to start growing your mushrooms so that you'll have enough to be able to plot out your excursions, you know, over time, that you can go when you want to. You don't have to go looking for something to be able to try to get in and be able to, you know, go on the different journeys and things like that. So I would start with doing research on, you know, Googling psilocybin mushrooms, growing mushrooms, cultivation mushrooms. You'll find millions of sites. Now, of course, everything, you know, that comes up isn't going to be on the up-and-up in culture and want you to spend money and things like that. But you have to do your due diligence, just like you do with anything else. You know, caveat emptor, you know, let the buy everywhere. You know, so, but there are a lot of good tutorials around. There are several good books, you know, the books of Paul Stamets, books by Terrence McKenna, and things that are on YouTube and Vimeo and things like that. You can go to my lectures on the net and get a lot of information that can start you out into being able to cultivate your own magic mushrooms so that you'll have the availability to be able to take the doses that you need. You'll know where the mushrooms come from. You know what the intention was in growing them, and you'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to move forward with this. So we need people moving forward. We don't need detractors and silly people who, you know, think all you're trying to do is get high. Mushrooms don't get you high. You know, the toad doesn't get you high. DMT doesn't get you high. Ayahuasca doesn't get you high. You know, if you want to get high, then that's something altogether different. It's not in this realm of information, you know, as far as getting high and dealing with that whole genre of experience as far as the human experience. So it's definitely something that we need to start moving on. You know, the scientific community, the colleges and universities all have their entheogenic, psychedelic, hallucinogenic programs going on, from, you know, John Hopkins and University of Pennsylvania, Stanford, Oxford, Eton, Cambridge, the University of City College of New York, on and on and on, Germany, France, and, you know, all over the world, all through Australia, they are moving towards entheogens. The elite are taking ayahuasca ceremonies, elite mushrooms, and things like that. Everybody's trying to upgrade, get ahead, except, you know, the regular average guy and gal who are doing nothing but going to work or, you know, going to the comedy show or, you know, some form of entertainment, instead of trying to take a little bit of that money invested in themselves by being able to, you know, have access to the entheogenic information and knowledge. You know, I mean, you know, shoot, if you go to the movies, it's, you know, if you take the girl, the girl take the guy, or whatever, you know, it's going to cost you almost $250 to get in there, you know. But once you get some popcorn, which is $9, you know, you've already spent $30. If you eat before you go, that's $40. So that's $80. You know, if you get a drink or, you know, a candy bar or something like that, you know, hey, you just spent $100 just going to the movie on Friday night. You can take that same $100, set yourself up to grow mushrooms and grow mushrooms for the rest of your life. You know, the thing is, it's not to, you know, I'm a teacher, and what the teacher's main goal is to make themselves obsolete. You know, you don't want your student to be hanging around you to have a old guru, old master, old so-and-so and such, and being beholden to you for the rest of their life. No, you're supposed to get them and get them going on their own 2 feet as fast as possible so they can get out and this thing can spread, not, you know, you withholding information. You know, I've taught you everything except the way for it to work for you, you know, because I hold that back because I want you to stay and I want you to keep paying money and being able to, you know, do this and that. No, I want you to know everything so that you can get out there and you can start going and you spread it to the next folks and we all start growing up in this thing together rather than, you know, being the grand wazoo and holding on to these people forever instead of teaching them how to fish, you know, instead of giving them fish and making them beholden to you forever.
I'm just looking in the queue, Baba Kalindi. Nothing yet
yes. From
Dr. Jerry. So I'm going to ask you, what the historic evidence of mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms, in ancient Kemet, for all the folks who are into ancient Egyptian legacy?
Well, mushrooms are what built ancient Kemet. They're actually pre-Kemetic, pre-dynastic. They go back thousands and thousands of years. They go back before the time of Ra Harmachis or the Sphinx, which is actually hundreds of thousands of years old. You know, Dr. Schott, who is a geologist who looked at the stones of the Sphinx and saw the water erosion, and that water erosion had to be thousands of years, and it had to be a time when that portion of the what we know as Kemet was being inundated with rain, and the time when the Sphinx was underwater at certain times. It has been recarved. The head of the Sphinx, you see, if you look at the head of the Sphinx, is smaller than it should be in relationship to the body, because it's been recarved the Face has been retired several times. Some folks say, well, the Face was a woman. It may have been a woman at a particular time. It may have been a lion during the time of Leo. And it may have been a man at other times because it's been retired, just like the Great Pyramid there on the Giza Plateau. It has been refurbished several times. They call it the Pyramid of Khufu or the Pyramid of Cheops. Khufu rebuilt, fixed the pyramid. He didn't build the pyramid. He refaced it and things like that. A repair job on it, you know, just like the Empire State Building, you know, every so often you got to get out there and you got to, you know, recalk the bricks and all that kind of stuff, fix things, put things together. It's no different with the Great Pyramid. It was recreated. See, pre-Kemetic shaman or priests, you know, and I know you know my rendition on the shaman, but, you know, folks should know about that. So the pre-Kemetic priests in this adjourned utilizing the Tree of Life and the mushrooms, what they saw in the hyperdimensional realms is what they brought back to Earth. What they saw in the heavens while eating mushrooms, they brought that back to the Earth. And they built what they saw in their travels. They saw Tekken and pyramids and gibbous-headed humanoids. They saw sheer clothing made out of light. They saw the jewelry as active technologies that were utilized in knowledge and accessing libraries and opening wormholes and all of these different type of things that they saw. They tried to reproduce on Earth in stone and in flax and in gold and in electrium what they saw in those hyperdimensional realms on Earth, and that's how they built the civilization or high culture of Kemet. Now what happened is you have the what they call the Younger Dryas impact information. That is when many of the civilizations around the world were destroyed, and the information that was apparent in many places around the world was supposedly lost because all of the cities that are on the coastal cities, this is like, you know, coming up to North Carolina now, the hurricane is coming there. If it hits landfall and it's a certain level, you know, level 4 or whatever, it's going to destroy everything on that coastline. So the Younger Dryas impact was that four, some folks say comets, some folks say asteroids, came over the top of Canada and hit the North American ice shelf. You know, where I live now in Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and Wisconsin and Minnesota and all of Pennsylvania, had on top of it a 2-mile thick plate of ice. And this is why when people, you know, the paradigm and people, you know, we were here, this and all that kind of stuff. Well, you were here, you were sitting on 2 miles, a 2-mile plate thick of ice, 12,600 before the Common Era. And what happened was when these asteroids or comets hit that ice shelf, what it did was it melted that ice, particleized, you know, that ice, threw it into the oceans, you know, and the Atlantic and things like this. And what it did is it rose the water table, it changed the saline, the salination of the ocean. In other words, what gives us a temperate zone is that solar radiation hitting the equator is trapped underwater by the salt water. But when, and what happens is when it's trapped underwater by the salt water, that heat is carried by the North Atlantic Current northward, and that heat that is trapped is liberated slowly, and that gives the northern hemisphere its temperate climate. But all of those things were changed, and you had what we call a Younger Dryas, which was the plunging of the temperatures back into an ice age, coming out of the ice age, going back into a 1,000-year ice age. And then at 11,600, there was another asteroid or comet impact that changed the climate again. Now, what happens is that at that time, this is when civilization is restarted, or high culture is restarted, where agriculture comes about, and things like this. So Kemet, after the Younger Dryas, started to become drier and drier and drier in the Sahara, and it moved people to the available water source, which was the Nile River, and that's where the so-called civilization high culture sprouted up. But it was these world tragedies that precipitated not only the sinking of Atlantis, and I don't know if they called it Atlantis, and Plato is the first to talk about the sinking of Atlantis, which he got from his ancestor Solon, who had went to visit the Kemetic priest, and the Kemetic, and he asked about the last cataclysm, or he asked about cataclysms, and the Kemetic priest said, well, what, which cataclysm are you talking about? Because there have been several. Because there have been several world-ending events where human beings had the technology to be able to off-world themselves while these things happened and then come back. So you had jumpstarts of civilization where they had technologies that were so far advanced of what we've seen and what is happening, what is even happening now, to where they had people that off-world. Okay, this doggone dinosaur-sized asteroid comet, you know, that's 25 miles in diameter, you know, moving at 17,000 miles a second, made out of nickel or something like that, slam to the planet. Either you can deflect it, or you can off-world into someplace else. And when the dust dies, and when the temperatures warm up and things like that, come back and restart civilization. So they said, the Kemetic priest said, this happened several times. And people will tell you, well, there's no flood story in, you know, talking about a flood or anything like that in ancient Kemet. But there is at the Temple of Edfu, primeval mound that people stayed in, because temple complexes were places of refuge, inter and extra dimensionally, places of refuge where civilization was restarted from that information. Because the Temple of Edfu, the temple that's there, is built upon earlier temples that were destroyed. And when they came back, they rebuilt on the same mounds and plates that the old temples were. They rebuilt the newer temples and encoded the information into the newer temples. So the Kemetic priest told Solon that the last one happened 9,000 years prior to him being there, which was 12,600 before the Common Era, which is the same dates that they give for the Younger Dryas impacts, which was those asteroids that came over the top of Canada, hit the North American ice plate, which was 2 miles thick, and melted and particleized that. That's when you have what's called the Clovis, the Clovis people in New Mexico, where they were killed out, where you had these woolly mammoths and mastodons, where, you know, they were flat, you know, they were killed with food still in their mouth, their thigh bones broke, you know, and all in one spot. They try to tell you that these primitive hunter-gatherer cultures killed 10,000 woolly mammoths with spears before they could reproduce. That's how these mammoths were killed. No, they were all killed in a single afternoon, just like Atlantis and all these different places were destroyed in a single afternoon, because these tidal waves so gigantic that they just destroyed civilizations, you know, with one wave. And that's why the water table rose 400 feet. So when you go off the shore of any place, you know, that had ancient civilizations, you know, if you go 400 yards, 500 yards, a mile out, into the ocean, you'll find sunken cities, because those were, at the time of their existence, not under the water that they are now because of this Younger Dryas impact, which is one of several world collapsing, civilization collapsing areas in time that just destroyed worldwide civilizations because of these asteroidal impacts, you know. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, we had the choice.
Coming up.
You held it down,
Master Kalindi, tonight.
Well, I'm trying. I'm still hopeful. Maybe.
I just tried calling him just now, and it just went to voicemail. So we're going to call. We're just going to bring it to a close, and I guess you'll find out what happened. I hope he's in a safe place because his phone is off.
Maybe we can try it another day. Catch up with him and try it another day.
Yeah. I want to thank all the listening audience. I want to thank you again, Baba Kalindi. And may these words been, I hope these words were elevating and inspirational to all of your evolution. So thank you, everyone.
Well, thank you Brother
Kalindi,
for hosting this as you always do. I know you go above and beyond. And like I said, hope we can get him in, hopefully. You're not having any difficulties and things like that. But I'll get back with you and let you know what's up.
Okay, will do. And again,
all right.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah,